This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon and welcome to the show. I'm Meera Sivasodhi. In our health and living segment today, of course, Dr. Rajesh Singh, consultant orthopedic surgeon, here for his monthly show. It's been a while, actually. Skipped one month, I know. But today we're going to be talking about children. I mean, has your child been bugging you either for a scooter or to go on the trampoline? You know, there are trampoline parks now. Outdoor play is part of growing up. And we do know that our children are lacking outdoor play. But what do you need to know about preventing or even dealing with injuries when it comes to outdoor play? Well, you know, trampoline parks are indoors, so it happens indoors as well. We're going to be discussing that in today's segment. If you have a question for us, give us a call. The number is 0377 109000. You can tweet BFM Radio or WhatsApp 0187898899. Now, Dr. Rajesh, in terms of the child, a lot of us think the children are small adults. They're not. Can you explain the musculoskeletal system of a child and what's actually happening throughout the years?
Okay. The idea that the child is not a mini adult is probably a really good place to start, because they may look the same, but they don't function the same. So if you look at a child growing, so let's sort of define children here. So let's say already able to walk independently, run, catch a ball, all the way up to, let's say, get IC age 12, maybe not so relevant, let's say about 16, 18, right? So from maybe, say, about 4 to 18, I think that's probably, 4 to 16, 18, that's probably the range that we're talking about. The skeleton changes during this time, so that the significant change between a child's skeleton and an adult skeleton is how bouncy it is. So children's skeletons are much bouncier than adult skeletons. Their bones, I wouldn't say are weaker, but they don't respond in the same way to stresses and forces that adult bones do. And a really good example of this is this thing called a green stick injury. So imagine if you took an adult twig from a tree, and it was a brown twig, and you bent it forcibly, the twig would snap. That's the skeletal system in an adult that's overloaded. If you take the same size twig, but it's still green, meaning it's still growing, and you bend it, it's a different response. So that's probably a very good summary of the difference between a child's skeleton and an adult skeleton. They may look the same, the twig may have the same size, the same shape, the same color, but they're fundamentally different. And I have a couple of patients under my follow-up who are very big children, as in 12-year-old soccer players who are bigger than you and I, right? And the real challenge there is to say, well, it's a big stick, but it's still green.
Right. And children seem to be bigger than us now. I mean, is there a reason why?
It's just nutrition. The whole idea is the Asian genetic potential was always thought to be small. I think must have been probably better part of one or two decades ago. I saw this lovely picture on the cover of Time magazine, which was an article on the improvement in basic nutrition and healthcare standards in India. And it shows this woman standing in front of an altar at a temple, and her son, or what seemed to be her son, behind her, who's literally twice as tall as she is. And the article was something like, you know, fulfilling India's potential or something like that. And it's the same all over Asia. It's the same in India. It's the same in China. It's the same in Malaysia. Almost all the Asian countries, actually not just the Asian countries, every country that's had a significant improvement in the financial standing of the country has had a significant improvement correspondingly in the size of the children which are born in that generation.
Developing countries like ours.
Developing countries like ours. Certainly speaking from first-hand experience, I can tell you that children from better socioeconomic backgrounds generally tend to be slightly larger. Given, when I say larger, I don't just mean fat. I mean taller, broader shouldered than children from much lower socioeconomic standards. And that is as simple as basic nutrition and hygiene.
Okay, and we're not exercising enough. We are eating a lot. Yes, we know that. But what will be the consequence of children on their musculoskeletal system if more and more of our children are not exercising?
Okay, look, this is a slightly contentious topic. Now, on the one hand, there's a group that says we have to get children out and, in inverted commas, exercising. On the other hand, there's the group that says, well, you know, you leave children alone, you know, they'll kind of do whatever it is that they're going to do anyway. So I'll take my own children as an example. All right. So, hi, Ambreen. Hi, Prisha. Daddy's on radio again.
And talking about you.
And talking about you again. Look, I have this big passion for ultrasound, musculoskeletal ultrasound. So I wanted to follow an idea once. So I was scanning my elder daughter, Marine. So I said, okay, come here, Daddy needs to scan your hand. And I was scanning her hand and looking at structures, going, okay, you know, what's what? And she said, Daddy, how come you always experiment on us? And I said, well, why else would you have children? reflecting on that now, Prisha is at home waiting for me to take her to the park as soon as I finish. And she wants to go to the park because she wants to ride either her scooter or a bicycle right up to where the swings are. And she wants to go as high as she can on the swing for the tickle in the tummy that she has. That's fun for her. So I think that kids want to play. It's sort of the occupation of a child is to play. And physical play is part of that occupation of a child, for which I think that's fine. But there are the school of thought that says, right, you know, now they need their running shoes, they need their gym gear, and I need to set a program for them. That I philosophically disagree with. So Umbreen had a fitness goal, right? So she said that she wants to be able to do more at sports in school. And she was having a little bit of difficulty achieving that goal. So we said, okay, fine, we'll get you a Fitbit. So, right, so we got her a Fitbit. She does her 8,000 steps a day, 10,000 steps a day, and it gives her something to work towards. And then she achieved her fitness goal in school. So when you talk about children and exercise, I think that they need to be given space to play. And that obviously includes physical play. That play doesn't necessarily have to be outdoors. That play can be indoors. I've seen kids playing around low-cost flats, right? Jumping on and off the staircase, playing badminton between where the cars are parked. They're outdoors, they're doing stuff. I've seen apartments with those sort of little indoor play areas, reasonably good play areas with soft mats. And, you know, children just being children and playing in there. And in that, they tumble, they fall, they do all the normal child type thing. But they've actually had a degree of physical exposure to build the skeletal system in the way that you would normally expect it to.
And if you don't indulge in some amount of play, then what happens?
Then basically you become dysfunctional. And I see, I wouldn't say every day, but rarely I see some adults, young adults who are in the workforce now, who can't sit down for a full day at work. You know, they go, my back hurts, my leg hurts, my this hurts, my that hurts. And when I examine them, I go, no substance at all. You know, it's all just bone, ligament, skin, fat, very little muscle, very little structural development. And those people are more the exception. It's the exceptionally sedentary that ends up in trouble. So the analogy I give, it's like the mind. Now, you know, you don't need special classes for a child to develop their mind. You know, sort of they live in a normal household, they go to a normal school, they do normal type things. As long as they're not exposed to anything particularly bad or unhealthy or incorrect, they generally grow up, you know, mind works okay. Body's pretty much the same. So I'm certainly not a fanatic about it. I would just say that identifying poor habits early are probably relevant. And now that kids get taller, I mean, certainly in my house, I find that I'm having to find some specific study places for the kids because the dining table's not good enough anymore. It's not set up to study. But lots of kids study at the dining table. So I'd say that, you know, posturally, that's probably something that you'd want to look at and go, you know, sitting in that position for such a long time, doing your homework's not such a good idea. So exercise-wise, that's probably more relevant rather than, you know, getting them out on the field with a regime of some description.
What about heavy school bags?
Okay, this is a topic that comes up year in, year out, not just here internationally as well. I think the consensus that we have is that you can't break your bag carrying school bags, provided that you carry them correctly. The issue is you don't particularly have very well ergonomically designed Hello Kitty school bags. And especially not the ones you buy from the Pasar Malam.
No.
Right? So that's probably where the mismatch is. Back pain in children is not normal. Right, let's just say that categorically. So if a child comes back and says, oh, you know, I've got a sore back, you give it a bit of a rub, give them a kiss and say, right, off you go to bed. They get up in the morning and still sore. That needs to be looked at. So all those things are just sort of, you know, everyday normal things. I think injury prevention is probably something that's particularly relevant. So in the park where my daughter goes, for example, we don't certainly have some of the injury machines which were in parks when I was a boy. You know, those monkey bars, mm-hmm. those are absolute injury machines.
Yep.
And I think it's been recognized that they're bad toys for children. It seemed like a good idea at the time. But
why? It was fun.
So smoking.
No, you cannot associate the monkey bar with smoking.
Smoking's not fun? I don't know. I've never smoked.
I shouldn't be asking you about people, the man who didn't exercise.
No, I exercise. I never did team sport. My exercise was always
swimming and yoga.
Swimming, cycling, not so much yoga. Yoga's in the mind. So mainly swimming and cycling. And that's principally because I was really interested in the machine. I was interested in the human machine even as a child. Right, yeah, I had my bicycle, I had gears, and there was sort of the mechanical machine. But
why am I not surprised?
Yeah, I was just, you know, I was just interested.
And you stayed a mile away from the monkey bar. Why is it so bad?
No, I didn't. I was all over the monkey bar. It's just in my later professional years.
Why? What sort of injuries are you seeing?
Okay, the problem with monkey bars is firstly saddle injury. So a saddle injury is, as you can imagine, a child falls and straddles the bar. So the design of the monkey bars initially never really accounted for the fact that somebody may fall, right? I think it was more a construction exercise going, yep, here's a simple structure that you can make out of hollow metal tubes, which is, you know, uniform in design, easy to make, easy to maintain, and provides a climbing space. You may design that for, like, you know, insects or pets. But the human being, when it falls, those things break the fall very poorly. So you tend to get hit on parts which normally are not designed to take force. So saddle injuries are one, head injuries are the other, and broken wrists are, you know, just almost universal. Because you can get up to heights which are uncontrollable. So if you can make the one step from one rectangle to the next rectangle to the next rectangle, well, if you can go from the bottom rectangle to rectangle number one, you can automatically go from number one to number two. There's no increment in difficulty. So I think that was probably one of the fundamental design flaws. So somebody with very little skill could go quite high and then fall off and injure themselves.
Okay, we're discussing children and play, as well as some of the injuries that children go through in the playground. Now we got bouncy castles, we have indoor trampoline parks, we have trampolines at home, many of us have it. It looks like a whole lot of fun. Well, we've spoken about the monkey bars now, not really the most appropriate for children, according to Dr. Rajesh.
And even if you look at most of the modern parks and playgrounds which are coming out now, sprouting around whichever housing area, you'll find that there are no monkey bars. So they have the parallel bars that you can swing one from the other, mm-hmm. but not that sort of multiple metal cubes or metal rectangles stacked one on top of another. Those just don't exist anymore.
They don't. That's true. I mean, it did when we were in school. Okay. So if you have a question for Dr. Rajesh, give us a call. The number is 0377-109000. Tweet us at BFM Radio or text 018-789-8899. Good afternoon and welcome to the show. I'm Meera Sivasodhi, Dr. Rajesh Singh, consultant orthopedic surgeon in the studio with us. We're discussing children and play and, of course, injuries. I think you've made it very clear, Dr. Rajesh, that children are not small adults. You've spoken about the branch from a tree and how, you know, it breaks. When you're an adult and you snap that branch, that's the adult makeup of the musculoskeletal system. Whereas if you look at a very young branch, and when you try to attempt to snap it, you know what really happens, and that would be the child's musculoskeletal system. So still very malleable, would you say? With injuries, sometimes as parents, sometimes we just say, you'll get better, don't worry. So when should we actually bring them to the doctor?
This is a very relevant question. Let me think who I have seen in practice recently. Okay, so there's a young lady whom I saw. She must be 12 now, 11 going on 12. She had wrist pain for probably about 3-4 weeks. She had difficulty doing schoolwork. She had difficulty doing sports in school. And that's probably when the parents brought her. So I would say that children generally don't malinger, they don't complain, especially if they're in a social group. They tend really to be carried away in the social group. So I think the answer is, if a parent observes a child being unable to do something in a social circumstance where you'd expect the child to be able to do it, and it's clearly because something hurts or something doesn't work quite well, that would be a good situation in which to bring a child to a doctor, particularly because you can clearly state the limitation. My child used to be able to run for the school bus with their friends. Now they can't. After the fourth step, they start limping, and by the tenth step, they've fallen really behind. So that's very clear. As opposed to, grandmother said something doesn't look quite right. That's not so clear.
Okay, listen to the child, or at least just observe.
Observe. I wouldn't say listen. Children can't tell. We have to infer. So really observe.
There's also this fine line about what we refer to as growing pains.
No such thing. Geez, I think that's such a stupid diagnosis.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. Why?
Because I was subject to that diagnosis when I was a boy.
No wonder.
I kid you not.
Why?
Why? Because I had really bad knee pain. I just couldn't run.
Isn't that alarming?
Not when you have a pediatrician mother and a surgeon father.
I was just going to ask. They were too close to the problem.
They were too close to the problem. They just, doesn't like sport. It's probably just...
See, that. I was right all along.
Well, the funny thing is, it's only in my much later years that I worked out what the actual issue was.
What was it?
It's called a condition called discoid meniscus. So that's where a part of the body is formed excessively, as opposed to, you can either have stuff that's overdeveloped or underdeveloped. So my menisci were overdeveloped. So when I was young, there's a lot of pressure on the knees. They're really, really tight. As I've gotten older, it's completely gone away, because the normal degenerative process has actually been a relief rather than a problem. But
so you had extra, so you could afford to lose some.
Yeah, exactly right.
How lucky, in a way.
In a way, yeah. But, certainly growing up at the time, it wasn't a lot of fun.
How long were you in pain?
Probably the sort of the football years in school. Okay. That's really the thing. So, and the thing was, I could start off playing football, but I could never finish the game.
Because it was hurting.
Because it was hurting. So goalie was okay. I could probably manage goalie pretty okay. But any of the offensive positions, it just hurt. Went to see all the orthopedic surgeons at the time, and they said, there's growing pains. I'm a little bit particular about structural diagnoses, right? I really, really like a structural diagnosis. I don't like a sort of sweeping brush kind of diagnosis. And the structural diagnosis must be to that particular structure, which, look, in those days, that was probably not unreasonable. MRIs were new. We hardly had any. Ultrasound was completely unheard of. X-rays in children, they tended not to do. So I think growing up, I didn't really like the term growing pains, because you can say, soft tissue pain of unknown origin, that's okay. I think that's probably saying the same thing. But I don't like this idea that pain is to be expected as part of the growing process. Growing is painless, not painful.
I'm writing this down. Soft tissue pain of unknown origin.
Yeah, of indeterminate or unknown origin, which is okay. Which is a fair. Which it's a fair statement because it says I don't know.
Okay.
It doesn't say it's nothing. Fundamentally different statements.
Sure. You don't know what it is.
Yeah.
And it's hard to tell in children, isn't it? Because you're not terribly sure.
But the kids aren't terribly sure what bits go where or what the relationship between the bits are.
Yeah.
So there it's really observation.
Okay. Let's talk about trampolines. A lot of us have them at home. Mm. We have trampoline parks. Mm. Injuries.
Okay, look, trampoline injuries don't result from the trampoline. They result from falling down. So, you know, it's like it's no problem falling off the Himalayas. It's landing that's an issue.
Mm-hmm.
So the thing about trampoline injuries, and I've researched this very, very carefully because my kids want one. So
just the person we should be speaking to.
Okay. So what I've worked out is, if you get a trampoline with appropriately heighted and measured sides, so there's actually the side walls that go up to the height that you could potentially jump on the trampoline, and they're adequately padded, and you only have one person in at a time, then fun probably outweighs fear and fracture. If you don't have all those conditions, then you're definitely going to break something. So we used the... When I was working in Australia, the highest incidence of childhood injuries used to come in immediately after Christmas. That's sort of 26th to probably about the 3rd or 4th of January,
mm-hmm.
because kids have all got their presents, which is their bicycles, roller skates, hoverboards, trampolines. And they've all started using them. So Christmas Day, not so much. On the 26th, they start. And then it peaks until just before school starts. And then when school starts, it comes down again. And that's just because you've got a whole bunch of kids with a whole bunch of toys which are potentially injury-creating, that they're sort of forced to use, forced being in inverted commas, in a very short time. So, and look, there's a bit of a practical challenge. So when number two wants to go to the park, she wants a bicycle, it takes 15 minutes to put the pads on. You know, you got to find them, you got to make sure they're the right way, then you got to put them on, then you got to put your helmet on. And that's just the rule.
I mean, my grandfather would have said, whoever had pads and helmets and all of that back in the day.
Correct.
They fell, they got up, they learned, you know.
Yeah,
so why are we making such a big fuss?
Because I have two princesses. because in those days, it's amazing what we survived. I would say that it's really amazing what we survived. And probably there's some children that didn't quite survive those. So safety standards are better these days. To answer your grandfather, the answer is safety standards are better these days.
Forget my grandfather. I didn't have any pads or helmets.
Neither did I.
And I had a BMX.
So did I. Don't pray, huh? And boy, I've got some spectacular scrapes, right? I've got...
Scrapes, Dr. Yeah. Rajesh. So what?
Yeah. Well, I mean, there's the one with the stone that took a few years to come out. So. It did. There's a little lump there. I just thought it was a scar. And then one day, I had the ultrasound. And I go, I wonder what's under that scar. And they go, oh, look, it looks like a stone. Wonder when that came from.
Okay.
And I asked Mum. And she said, yeah, you know, there's this one time when you went up that hill that I told you not to, and you end up falling in the drain. So I said, yeah, probably from then. Look, I don't think that kids should be mollycoddled necessarily. But I think that what's reasonable and practical we should apply just because we can. Certainly, you know, whoever heard of pads being available in the supermarket when we were in school? Just didn't exist,
mm-hmm.
right? But, you know, it's always, when I was a boy.
Yes.
So things change. You just keep up with the times.
Okay. But what's the worst that could happen?
I tell you what, I've seen some horrific injuries. Really, really. I mean, the one that still stays with me is two kids who live in a city went back to kampung for holidays.
Here.
In Malaysia. Went back to kampung for holidays. They know how to ride bicycles, and in kampung there's motorcycle. So they decide that they will take the motorcycle out for a joyride. two underage kids from town riding a motorcycle in a kampong, wearing shorts and t-shirts and slippers, have an accident, get shredded by glass. Completely and utterly shredded.
Where did the glass come from?
The car windshield that...
Oh, they hit into a car.
They hit into a car, right. And, you know, that just... They were literally shredded with glass. And that's what, you know, I had to deal with. I had these kids with shredded limbs and I had to take them to the operating theater and fish the glass out, right. And it was abominable, really. So... the worst that can happen is preventable unnecessary injury. What have I seen practically? So I've seen kids' heels pulled off. So the actual heel pad pulled off because they ride on the back of the bicycle. And when the bicycle goes over a bump, the person at the back's feet go in and the heel pad gets pulled off. That's just because they've taken the mudguard off, right? What else have I seen? I've seen tendons exposed, right? So you come off the bike, you've broken. Closed injuries are not so bad. Generally, closed stuff, it tends to heal without much issue. It's the open wounds that really give a lot of trouble. So I've seen every manner of imaginable injury, which then just begs the question, well, you know, if you had your helmet on, if you had your pads on and you got injured, well, you know, that's just kind of part of life. If you didn't have any safety gear on at all and you got injured, well, that's probably not so intelligent.
Okay. Yeah. Especially now that we know.
Not just now that we know, but now that it's available. Mm-hmm. You know, I got my kids' stuff from, you know, Maidin or Giant or one of those not too expensive places. Because I'm like, yeah, you know, maybe use it for 4, 5 months, 6 months and then, you know, they'll outgrow it and all break. I've got to chuck it and then buy some more. So... it's so readily available now. Okay. You'd be remiss not to use it.
Better safe than sorry, I guess. Okay, we'll come back and find out a little bit more about bouncy castles and playground equipment, whether or not it's age-appropriate. We have better playgrounds today and playground injuries and what you see in A&E, I suppose. Scare us as much as you can. We'll come back and find out more about children and outdoor play. Dr. Rajesh Singh, consultant orthopedic surgeon in the studio with us. If you'd like to give us a call, the number is 03-77-109-1000. You can tweet BFM Radio or WhatsApp 018-789-8899 with a question or if you'd like to share an experience on the bigger picture, BFM 89.9. Good afternoon and welcome to the show. In our Health and Living segment today, Dr. Rajesh Singh, consultant orthopedic surgeon. We are discussing play and children injuries to the musculoskeletal system. We often, as I mentioned earlier, we often think that children are small adults. They're not. But we want to talk about now, what we want to go to talk about now is about children's bones, remodeling after an injury. Now, how does that happen? I mean, you've spoken about the branch just now, Dr. Rajesh, but the fact that it is malleable, how does the bone then remodel?
Okay, so let's get to the idea of what remodeling is. The skeleton that you have is not static. You get a new skeleton every 7 years. So the skeleton that you had 7 years ago did not exist, does not exist today. Not a single cell, not a single anything of it is still there. So the idea that the skeletal system is dynamic is very, very important. The skeletal system also, and in children obviously that's much less, you know, the skeletons change very quickly. And the other idea that people need to have is that the skeletal system responds to stress. So one of the big... I suppose ideas that patients don't have is child falls down, comes in, and the x-ray shows that the bone is not straight. It's not bent. It's buckled, but not broken. And, you know, the parents look at the limb and go, oh, it looks pretty bent. And when I say to them, oh, don't worry about it, you know, it'll straighten up in a few years. The mothers in particular give me the you can't possibly be serious look. Aren't you going to do something about it? So, there's probably two ways to look at it. If a child, I'm just talking about simple things like, I don't know, broken forearms and wrists. You know, the most common fractures in children would be of the distal radius, which is around the wrist, followed by the elbow, probably followed by everything else. So the idea for the wrist and elbow is very, very different. And the reason is because in the wrist, it rarely involves a joint. In the elbow, it frequently can involve a joint. And I think that's the line of delineation. Is there injury to an associated joint? And is there injury to the growth plate? Because the bone is growing. So for children's bones, if a child comes in having fallen over, I may just examine the child, see where it hurts. I mean, it's obviously deformed. If it's obviously bruised, I may do an x-ray, I may do an ultrasound. At the end of that, I'll have a look at it and say, well, look, is this going to sort itself out or do I have to do something about it? If it's going to sort itself out, the parents actually have to be patient and say, well, growth will correct this. And the further injury may happen in the time that the bone isn't exactly straight because biomechanically it's slightly disadvantaged from the position that it was. And well, you know, if it happens at the time, then we'll deal with it. There's a boy I remember when I was working in a small town who came from a family, I think like five boys in the family. And each of those children, and I think I treated three or four out of the five, and each time they came in, the parents knew exactly what to do because the eldest son had already broken that particular bone in that particular way.
Because of play.
Because of play. And, you know, that was a bunch of particularly rambunctious boys. And they lived in sort of a semi-urban kind of situation. So their play area was probably not sort of as safe. But, you know, it's just where they lived. That's just where they lived. And the injuries were considered just part of the growing up process. So it wasn't such a big deal. But in that situation, the parental experience was really the most valuable thing. Because mom just didn't even bat an eyelid. She said, oh, yeah, you know, if you look at the x-ray and go, oh, doc, you should probably break that. Otherwise, it's going to fall and just break it again and it'll have to be here.
So is that what you did?
Yeah, because the...
So you broke the bone?
Because the bone was already bent. So the choice was either to let it straighten out by itself or give him an anesthetic, break the bone, put it in a cast,
goodness,
and let it set straight. So those are the two choices. In that situation, mom was able to say, well, look, you know, I know when I take him home, he's just going to fall down again. Mm-hmm. And when he falls down again, he's going to break it. Then when he breaks it, it's going to be more difficult because you have bent bone that's broken, not a straight bone that's broken. So in that sense, it was... the reason why it sticks with me is because to choose to break a bone, a little bit of a weird feeling,
you know.
It is a little bit of, I mean, even medically, it's a bit of a weird feeling, not just socially. And socially, obviously, that's not normal. But
it is not normal.
No, it's not normal. But medically, to choose to break a bone is actually a very a specific circumstance. So that's why I remember that circumstance. So I took the child to anesthetic and just went snap. And I said to the anesthetist, God bless you, man. thank God for your job.
But if you left it,
if I left it, it would straighten out over the next 3 to 4 years.
Yeah, but it's just that this boy was very active and the mother was concerned.
It was just going to break like his brothers and his brothers before him. And they had difficulty managing those fractures because a bent bone that breaks is very hard to manage. Whereas a straight bone that breaks is very easy to manage.
Is the bone what we're most concerned about when it comes to children? Because the musculoskeletal system and, you know, involves other parts as well. Mm. The muscle, the ligaments, you know, the tendons and all of that. But are we most concerned about the bone when it comes to children?
I think the bone is probably the most straightforward thing to address and the thing that we can address. The problem with other structures is, well, you know, you've ripped some muscle, what are you going to do about it? You've torn a tendon, you've torn a ligament. Not much more than just sort of immobilizing it. I mean, other than something that's sort of, you know, bunned or surgically obvious, you'd normally just immobilize it and then wait and see what happened. I treated a very interesting man recently. He had an injury as a child where a piece of glass poked into his forearm, and he said it was pretty deep, but, you know, he just had it removed and stitched. And between the ages of sort of 16 to 18, he said he started to get some numbness in his fingers. And then at 20-something, he has difficulty working. And so I examined him and I said, look, you've got an entrapment of a nerve around this old scar of yours. It can't be unrelated. So we examined him and we did the ultrasound. And what we actually found was that the old muscle injury was now constricting the nerve. So that's basically how it presents. So what I tend to find with old childhood injuries is I see them usually in young adulthood with a sequelae or a consequence. Very commonly pain on the little finger side of the wrist. So they would have fallen over on a bicycle, a skateboard, a trampoline, whatever, you know, had a bit of a cry, put some ice on it, had some Panadol. And, you know, 10 or 15 years later, the joint's slightly out of position. And because the joint's slightly out of position and they started work and they started using computers, it aches. Then they've gone for their massage. They've gone to see the sensei. They've gone to see the dokong. They've had their acupuncture. And they go, yeah, you know, it gets better for a while. Then it comes back. And that's usually when they end up seeing me. And then I'll say to them, look, let me show you what structures are damaged. Well, you know, are they torn, ripped, need to have surgery kind of damage? Well, not really. Are they, well, what can I do about it kind of question? Usually there's some tissue damage that can be fixed without big open surgery. And then it's rehabilitation to correct whatever deficit is, and then they're back on their way.
There's this tendency to sort of, you know, think that as long as, you know, it's not a fracture, you know, it could be a torn ligament or whatever. And most of the time, you don't even know what's happening. You would ice it at home, and after a couple of, you know, days or 2 weeks, child's on his way to recovery. But if you don't address it, there are times where that area becomes more vulnerable going forward. So how important is it to go and get something like that checked out as well?
That's just a common sense question, isn't it? Really, it's a very, very common sense question. We don't have enough facilities for, you know, every mum and dad to be bringing every kid in all the time. I think that's just not sensible and reasonable. I think what we need is we need people to be more appropriately trained in detecting common things and being able to examine. When I say more people, I mean sort of healthcare professionals. A colleague of mine who's a chiropractor sent me a WhatsApp saying, look, doc, you know, I think this child's got a simple elbow injury called a pull elbow. Mm-hmm. That's where a bone slipped out from under a ligament. You know, do you think I should try and put it back in, or do they need to go to the hospital? And putting it back in is really just putting the child palm up and forcing the elbow bent. You know, it's as simple as that. And I said to him, look, you know, have you done any before? He said, you know, I've done a bunch. Do you think I should attempt it? I said, absolutely. It's kind of a no-harm situation. And in that circumstance, he's given, because he's a chiropractor, but a very well-trained chiropractor. So he was able to look at a child with a sore elbow, do an X-ray, make a clinical diagnosis, and then say, I can attempt treatment. The challenge which I have with healthcare practitioners, and I don't mean doctors, I mean physiotherapists, allied health, lots of primary carers, is they just call it, in inverted commas, strain or sprain. So they don't give me a tissue diagnosis. And then, you know, they jolly the patient along for, you know, weeks or months, and then the patient's not better. And then they say, don't know. So I would say, to answer your question, I certainly don't think that, you know, you need to go running to a healthcare practitioner with every single strain and sprain. But I think if things are recurrent, you should probably get them looked at. And, you know, if a child says, you know, every time I play some sport, you know, my ankle's swollen or it's red or it's hot or some sort of physical thing is probably what I'm looking for. Mm-hmm. So if you bring a child to me and child says, yeah, you know, I can do everything mommy wants me to be here, that's no use.
Okay. So, but it's not going to be late if you don't address it.
The challenge is with all of life. What stage is it practical? So I can only advise at what stage it is advisable. And the rest is just dependent on practicality.
Okay. What would be your advice to parents who have children? I mean, our children are active. I haven't gone through many of the sports, actually. And I was going to talk about Tiger Woods and Serena Williams. We can probably come back and revisit this topic and to look at, you know, more, you know, case study kind of thing. But what would be your advice? Just practical advice when, you know, we take our children out and if there is, in fact, an injury or an accident, what do you do?
Okay. So let's take the situation. Let's say that, so the park up at Tamantun, right? Mm-hmm. So I think that's probably quite a good park. Got a rubberized surface. So if your kid's out there, you know, playing on the equipment, you know, has a fall or a spill, The first thing you'd probably do is just really to stop them, rest it, elevate it. You can get some ice. There's the guy selling bean curd at the end, another guy selling coconuts at the end. You can grab some ice from them in a plastic bag.
Yes, very practical. Yeah,
just stick ice on it and, you know, put a t-shirt, towel, whatever on it. Stick ice on it for a good probably 20, 30 minutes and then get the child to use it. If the child can use it at the end of a good 20, 30 minutes worth of ice, then it's probably nothing. If after the ice they still can't, as in, you know, they've spent 20 minutes looking at the playground that they really want to get back to, and at the end of 20 minutes when you hit the go button and they say, I can't go, then probably you need to rest it overnight, maybe give them some Panadol. Next morning, if it's still sore, can't go to school, can't do normal activities, you probably need to get it looked at.
Okay, simple, something to keep in mind. Mm. Thank you very much for joining us today. Dr. Rajesh Singh, consultant orthopedic surgeon, talking to us about play and children and injuries on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.